Working? Okay. Okay. Just to give a bit of a little more overview too, in addition to what I'm going to be doing for a few minutes here in terms of the pronunciation, the cadence, the rhythm of the chanting, we'll be doing a little more actual practice after that with just doing requesting of precepts, requesting of Dhamma talk practice. So we'll get some, I won't say hands-on, voices-on practice of those two particular common ones. And then a little bit later on, after a break, Ajahn Janako is going to talk some about this, some of the very specific chants, particularly the Paritta chants that we do, and their origins and purpose and how we apply them, as well as some pointers on memorization too. So that's kind of a little bit of an overview of what we were thinking of doing for the rest of the day. But I thought we'd go into a little bit of the nuts and bolts here of the actual pronunciation. And there's a really good pronunciation guide in the chanting books, and I guess it's in both volumes. I've got the second volume here. It might be good to follow along. I think having the visual image is good as well as listening to me. So I've got the second volume on page 72. I think it is. Yeah. So just a brief note, as Lung Paul mentioned, the Pali language was, you know, originally an oral tradition, not written down. So it gets written down, and you probably lose something in the actual process of pronunciation with that. And of course, there was no written language of Pali. It was all oral. So the closest relative was Sanskrit, but it still wasn't the same. There have been different letterings, different literations of the language as it's come out. And of course, we use the Roman script here. So each of the different kinds of script, whether it's, you know, Sinhalese or Thai or Roman or whatever, all the different scripts will have slightly different interpretations of how things are pronounced. We are from the Thai tradition, so a lot of our pronunciation has sort of a Thai influence. Some people would suggest, anyway, and that's what I've heard suggested several times, is that probably the one that's likely to be the closest to the way it was originally spoken at the time of the Buddha. And actually, Pali wasn't necessarily the language too. It was probably more of different areas in India would pick up different ways of reciting the teachings in slightly different dialects, but probably at the time of the Buddha was something around the area of Magadha. But Pali is what's been passed down over the years. And probably the closest accurate pronunciations that you might hear according to some people, is from the Sinhala language from Sri Lanka. People posit that that's probably the closest one that you hear today that comes to the accurate pronunciation of Pali. So, of course, the Thais, will have their own inflections and their own emphases and their own ways of doing it. And just to let you know, the rules that we're about to talk about for chanting and pronunciation from the book here, and the way we understand it, aren't necessarily exactly what you're going to hear when you're with a group of Thai-trained chanters, because there's just certain aspects of the culture that in their language that make some of the literal Pali pronunciations hard to do. So what I'm about to say in terms of the rules, when you actually hear us chanting it, because we do it with the Thai bias, may not read according to the rule, So you're going to say, oh, hold on a second, but I thought that was supposed to be a short A, and you're pronouncing it as a long A, and that's generally because the Thais are a fairly relaxed culture, and they don't, you know, they're not so much concerned about actual precision of pronunciation, but more how it sounds to them, you know. And if it sounds nice, even if it's not accurate to the letter, then that's what you chant. So you'll hear different things, and also based on their own language and what is easy to pronounce and not easy to pronounce. So, I'll give some examples of that as we go along. Of like, well, here's how one might think you're supposed to pronounce it, and here's how it's pronounced in the Thai chanting. So you'll see some slight differences as we go through. So. Basically, there's in the chanting rhythm, which is sort of what we're all trying to keep up with and go through in the chanting process, there's long syllables and short syllables. The length of the syllable, whether it's a long one or a short one, which is about half it's like a half of the syllable. There's full syllables and half syllables, and we'll go over that a bit more on the second page here. But they're based on whether the vowel is a long vowel or a short vowel, and also whether there essentially are double consonants next to each other. So that is what determines the length of the syllable itself, and how it fits into a cadence of chanting. So basically, just to start with on that first page, let's talk about the vowels first, the vowels of A, E, I, O, and U. So there's short vowels and there's long vowels. Whenever you see a line over the top of a vowel, like an A, an I, or a U, those three particular vowels can either be short or long. And it's a long one when there's a line over it, and it's short when there's no line over it. E and O, whenever you see an E or an O, those are always a long vowel. There aren't any short vowel equivalents of those two. So those that determines the length of a syllable when there's a vowel involved. Every time you see a short A, an I, or a U, that would be sort of like a half-length syllable. Every time you see a long, an A, an I, a U with a bar over it, or an E or an O, is a long syllable. Consonants, there are some things to know that are specific. Most of the time, the consonants would be as you would pronounce them in English, with a few exceptions as listed here. When you see the letter C, it's like ch. It's not s or k, it's ch, whenever you see a c at all. As it says here, is in the word ancient. There's always it's always a ch pronunciation. Whenever you see an m or an n with a dot under or over it, as is in the guide here, you add a kind of a g at the end. So if as in the word sung. So whenever you see that dot, you put a little G after it, sung. Whenever you see a tilde over the letter N, that's like in the word Kenyan, and that's very similar to Spanish, if you know Spanish. And a V is a bit softer than the English V. It often sounds like, when we chant it, it almost sounds like a straight W. And I think that's easiest for the Thais. It's very, very soft as a Thai would pronounce it. Probably the exact poly is a little bit more in between the V and the W. It's kind of a hard distinction to make sometimes. But I think Thais have a hard time going V. It doesn't work on the on the teeth in the tongue, or teeth in the lips. I'm not going to go into a lot of detail about aspirated consonants, although just to make note here that with these ones that are listed here, these these consonants with an H after it, like B, H, C, H, D, H, etc., the aspiration is like this little puff of air that comes out of from the throat after it. So like the word dhamma, DHAMMA. I'm exaggerating the aspiration just so you can hear it. It's not usually quite that exaggerated, but instead of Dhamma, it's Dhamma, as a bit of an exaggeration. It's just a very slight puff of air that comes out when you see that when you see that H. Or like the word, some people will use it, address a monk as Bhante, B-H, as opposed to Bhante, which is where there's no aspiration. Banty, right? Sometimes you hear Banty.
Like T-H is T, it's not F.
Right, yeah, that's a good example.
T-H is not F, it's K.
Right, that's in, like in that next step example, T-H as in tongue, not in the, and pa as in palate, as opposed to photo. Won't go into things like retroflex consonants because I can't do them. I think if we get these basic ones here that we just talked about, we're doing pretty good as a starting point. So going down to that section where it says chanting technique, once you have grasped the system of Pali pronunciation and the following chanting technique, it allows you to chant a text in Pali from sight with the correct rhythm. Unstressed syllables end in a short A, I, or U. All other syllables are stressed. Stressed syllables take twice the time of unstressed syllables, rather like two beats in a bar of music compared to one. And this is what gives the chanting its particular rhythm. So this example that they've got is a great example, I think, that starts with Buddho, and it's one that we chant almost every day. And you can see the numbers underneath designate whether it's a full syllable or a half syllable, or as the words they use, stressed syllables or unstressed syllables. So as that example, you've got Buddho, Susudho, Karuna, Mahanawo. You see how that works with the rhythm? Okay. The reason that, let's just go through that one particular line, and it's detailed more in the next section, but you have a full-length syllable whenever there's a long vowel, but you can see bud, that U is actually a short vowel, so you might wonder, why is that a full-length syllable, even if it's a short U? The reason is because also for a full-length syllable, that happens when you have a double consonant. So you see there's two D's right next to each other in the word Buddho. So whenever you have a double consonant like two D's, that actually turns the first syllable into a long one. So that's the reason why Bud is a long syllable. The reason why Do is a long syllable is because of the O, which is always long. Okay? Have I lost anybody here? So it's both not only long vowels, but a double consonant. When you have two consonants together, that makes the first syllable a long one. So you've got Buddho, and then Su is just a short U, so that's a half length or a short syllable. And then Susudho, and again that Sud is long because of the double D. Even though it's a short U, it's a double D. And then Dho is long because of the O. And then you've got two short syllables, karu, and then na is long because of the long A, the A with the bar over it. And then mahan, because of the double N. Nawo, because of the O. So budo, susudo, karuna, mahanawo. Make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So once you've got the knowledge of how it works, then you can figure it out if you remember these rules, even if you're on your own. When you're with a group of people who are, you know, like at the monastery, sometimes it's easiest just to listen, and then you sort of get the rhythm as you're listening. So that's where as Lung Pa was really stressing, that's where listening comes into importance. So going down further on that page, two details are important when separating the syllables. Syllables with double letters get divided in this way. And it's pretty much what I was just saying. Like anicca, that long syllable in the middle is because of the double C, not anicca. It's anicca. And you can almost conceive of these double syllables as pronouncing it twice. It's kind of hard to do sometimes, but that would be like anicca, if you were to really, overstress it. Anicca. Or as in the next one, pug-ga-la. Pug-ga-la. You can think of it as pronouncing that consonant twice. Okay. So that's generally, I think, without going, the rest of it is good information, and you might want to take a look at this on your own at some time, but that gives you the basic structure as to how to pronounce it and how to get the cadence down. Those are the rules that determine the cadence. Any questions on that right off the beginning? Okay. Now, as I was saying before, having said all of that, we don't always, because of the coming from the Thai tradition, we don't always follow the rules. So, like, you'll hear us chant when we chant, like, say, just the Namo Tassa. We go, Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Samma Sambuddhasa. And so, like, say, the Namo Tassa, that's actually really those A's that are in both Namo and Tassa are both short. But just as the way we chant it because of the way it's evolved and the way people like to hear it and think it sounds more beautiful that way rather than Namo Tassa Bhagavato, which would be more, accurate. Namo Tassa Bhagavato would be the way that you would say it if you were pronouncing it according to rule. But that's not the way it happens. So you just have to be relaxed about it and kind of go with the flow. Also, the Thai pronunciation, people from Thailand have a hard time pronouncing two consonants together oftentimes. So like if you look at the word, if you flip back a page in the second book, I'm not sure, yeah, you won't find this in the first book, but there's like the word upajitwa on page 69 of the second book, the third line down. It has the letters G-I-T-V-A, so like the T and the V. We would say upajitwa. But a Thai person often has the difficulty pronouncing two consonants together. So they'll add a vowel in between. So it would be jitawa. So you will hear people say upajitawa, even though it's upajitwa, because of that difficulty. So you oftentimes see the two consonants together and there'll be a vowel inserted in there. We'll just go with it. Just listen and enjoy it. But hold on a second, there's not an A in there. Well, that's the way we do it. Sometimes. That's true. Yeah, and sometimes we don't. Yeah, sometimes we actually do it to pronounce it the way that it's written. Right. That's good. Yeah, even the inconsistencies are inconsistent. That's where, again, listening comes in. Any questions about those nuts and bolts before we move into a little bit of actual practice? Or any other points that need to be pointed out? Okay. We'll move on to some practice with Lung Pa. I think you were going to practice with requesting precepts and requesting the Dhamma talk. Yeah. Okay. Oh, we need a microphone.
I thought that we could Just to one is to I thought to practice. One should just to have something to practice with, and then practicing. There's a couple requests. One is they're requesting of the three refuges and five precepts. And one of the reasons I want to do this is to get more people knowledgeable of how to do it, so that they feel comfortable to make those requests. I mean, there's say like on our, I mean, it's very similar. I would say the requesting of five precepts, requesting the eight precepts. But so like on the lunar observance nights, when the lay people come, then people feel comfortable to go ahead and begin and request the precepts. And or when there's ceremonies happening, then it's invariably part of a ceremony would entail requesting the three refuges and the five precepts. So like... Or if there's an invitation in some ceremony at a house blessing or something like that, and get everybody together, and that's us as a group then requesting the three refuges and the five precepts. It's a very appropriate thing to be doing. And so that... and it's a good way of just looking and figuring out how to learn the chanting. So like on page 126 is the request for a group, as a group of people wanting to take refuges and precepts, and one could... in doing that, so that it's mat yang bandhe titsarane natsaha. So you see, there's mat is a half syllable, yang is a full syllable, ban is the full syllable, te is a full syllable, titsara are three half syllables. Ne is a full syllable, not the last one is a half syllable, and then pan is the full syllable, cha is a half syllable, silani is a, because there's long a, so there are two full syllables, ni is a half syllable. Ya chama, so it's two full syllables, and followed by a half syllable. So then you get your rhythm of how it's chanted, and even if it's a short chant like this, you're learning how it all works, because that's the system that applies to all of the chanting of whatever, whether it's morning, evening chanting, whether it's the protective blessing chanting, that the whole structure follows that. So we could practice that, and like there's Mayang Bhante Duti Yampi for the second time, asking for the precept, Tati Yampi for the third time, so that we want to give that a try together, and I'll lead, and people want to follow and chant together. Mat yang bandhe ti sarane natsaha pancha silani yachama dutiyampi mayang bandhe ti sarane natsaha pancha silani yachama Tati iam pi ma iam pante ti sarane na saha pancha silani yachama. So this is a chant that, say, in Buddhist countries, everywhere, this is something that you learn from the time you're a little kid, and you're, it's familiar. But I think for us in the West, and it's just something to, you know, learning to be comfortable with, and getting a sense of how it's used. So we want to just try that again, just to keep it familiar, keep it fresh. Ma yang bante ti sarane na saha pancha silani yachama dutiyam pi mayang bante ti sarane na saha pancha silani yachama tatiyam pi mayang bante ti sarane na saha pancha silani yachama. Any questions?
Yeah, maybe I missed the explanation, but sometimes I'm caught up by it. All of a sudden, there'll be no pausing between the words.
Yeah.
Like, ti sarane na saha. Between all the other words is a pause, but between those two words, there's no pause.
Yes.
Why?
Just because. in general, when Pali was actually first written down, there were no gaps. I think it's the same in English. The Middle Ages. It wasn't until the Middle Ages that they started to separate words and punctuation. And so Pali somewhat similar. So you'll get the, it's written like this, but in general, it would be basically all one word, and which is kind of hard. when you're chanting, especially in longer chants, then that's where it's helpful to be in a group, because you don't all stop at the same place, and it flows through mostly. But generally, it's say arbitrarily making something. Normally, if you would stop, at least you'd stop at a full syllable. But as I say, even like saha is not that's three, not saha are three half syllables. But you start running out of breath, so so it's somewhat arbitrary, and especially when you're talking about doing the chanting of longer verses and longer chants, then it tends to string together. Like when you chant the Buddha's words on loving kindness, it's a karaniya manta gusalena yandang mandang sarakmi, and it just keeps going. But especially with a short chant like this, which is quite familiar to people, then it's and you're usually doing it with a group, then it's helpful to just have a few arbitrary stops. John.
Are the dots under the M's and the N's, are that inscrutable non-English sound that was mentioned in the paragraph?
Excuse me?
The dots under the M's and the N's?
Yes, so it's an NG sound, like an N.
Oh.
That's an N. Mayang.
Oh.
Mayang bante. And the N is a bit different. The N is the retroflex.
Oh, that's the
and you don't want to know. You don't even know about that.
Is that make it a long syllable, though? If it
has no, it doesn't.
Neither does.
The Mayang, it does, because it's you begin with a consonant and end with a consonant, so that it ends being a full syllable.
Yeah.
So it's like Ma is a half syllable, Yang is a full syllable, because you've got a consonants bracketing.
And that has nothing to do with the pitch going down. That's the little caret mark. That has no the fact that the dot is below has nothing to do with it. Doesn't make the pitch go down for that.
No. These are not. That's another. How do you say convention that we've came up with, mostly in England to try to get some consistency going, because you tend to, and it's incredibly boring if it's done in monotone.
Yeah.
And your voice tends to go up and down a little bit anyway.
Yeah.
So, but just trying to get some consistency.
Okay.
I didn't talk about the little triangles. Hmm. The tone designations upper or lower.
Yeah.
And if you think the pronunciation is inconsistent, then how do you use the tones? But they're general pattern, but we more or less shoot for, but it's not always exactly the way it's written there.
Yeah.
It seems like we stretch out the saha, though. That
saha. Well, it should be saha.
It should be just short.
Ti sarane na saha silani. So that it should, it's later, pronounce it properly, it'd be two short syllables. It's like ti sarane na saha pancha silani ya chama. Yeah.
This isn't directly related to where we are, but on the seventh of the eight precepts, there's that very long sequence of hyphenated words.
Where is that?
Are those separate? Can you explain why they're written in this way? Are they separate groups?
With the eight precepts? Oh, well, that's all. Again, it's a kind of a convention to, because those are all separate things. Those are separate words. Natcha kita wadita wi so gadasana. Those are all like shows, dancing, singing, plays, visukadasana. So like going, so that's what that's referring to. Mala, ganda, wile, panna, dharana, manda. Those are all types of jewelry and ornamentation that people would have worn at the time of the Buddha. So it's a list of all the different types of ornamentation and whatnot. And then in English, it's sort of a refrain from entertainment, beautification, and adornment, and sort of. You don't have to list every single kind of perfume and unguent and necklace and rings and whatnot.
We can have a different piercing reason.
Yes, this is true too.
Yeah. And sometimes the items are just inserted there to help write out a really long word.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just trying to make it a bit more easeful for people.
Also get tripped up by the fifth precept, just the
Sura Meraya. Those are different types of spirits, like
yes,
wine.
Pronunciation of that, like how.
Sura Meraya, Majja. So it's like two J's together, Majja, Pamadatana. So mancha is more like different types of drugs. Pamma datana, that make one heedless, careless. Pramad. Pamada. So, su'urameraya macha pamma datana.
It might be good to note too, like JH, DH, all these things, those are one letter, so those don't get seen as like two letters.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So like,
that's why it's a short syllable.
So like JH, yeah, J is a letter and JH is a second letter. It's not Jeha, but it's MHA, JH, so those H ones are seen as, but it's written with two letters in English, but it's actually one letter.
Yeah, those weird aspirated ones.
In Thai, it's one character in Thai. So it was confusing in Thai.
Okay. Do you want to try that again? Just that request for the five precepts. Mayang bandhe thi sarane nasaha pancha silani yachama dutiyampi mayang bandhe thi sarane nasaha pancha silani yachama tatiyampi mayang bandhe ti sarane na saha pancha silani yachama. Okay, so that's a ceremony, a ritual that is helpful to know and to be comfortable with. And another one is requesting of a Dhamma talk. So that like a formal request for receiving teachings. Of course, that happens here on a regular basis on the lunar observance nights, or the Sundays, I guess. And so people make requests, and it's nice if the lay community were familiar with that. Oftentimes it ends up being the anagarikas doing it, and which is okay, but it's nice to get people involved. The requesting of a bit of a history of the requesting of a Dhamma talk is that the Buddha basically forbade the monks from teaching without a request. And there's you don't set your soapbox up in the local park and start teaching away and gaining disciples. you teach when you're asked from the lay community to receive teachings. So it's quite a beautiful relationship in that one not presuming that people want to be enlightened to the Dhamma. To hear the good word sort of thing. The actual request harkens back to after the Buddha himself was enlightened, and his inclination was to not teach. This was really difficult And I don't know that anybody's going to understand this. And then the Brahma god, Sahampati, actually knew what the Buddha was thinking, and it's, the world is lost. And here is this being, is this newly awakened, and he's not going to teach. And so then he approaches the Buddha and makes that request. It, you know, beings are here with little dust in their eyes. Please teach the Dhamma out of compassion for them. And that's the request from the Brahma god for the Buddha. And then the Buddha began, okay, yeah, probably somebody will understand this, and made a decision to go ahead and teach. So it's just hearkening on that same kind of theme. And using the chant in Pali, say that you know, people that we do that here, or say we go first Tuesday in Berkeley, and people make a request for the five precepts, asking for the five precepts, and then they ask for the Dhamma talk, and there's a few people who know it. Kaushik, have you ever asked?
I've been asked to do this, and now I'm realizing I've done it all wrong.
Well, that's what we're here for today. And so following that same, I mean, it's just four lines, and so that Brahma Chaloka Dipati Sahampati Katanjali Anadhivalang Ayachata. So it's like a beginning, that Brahma, so a long, like one full syllable. Ma is a full syllable, cha half syllable, lo is a full syllable, ka full syllable, dipati two halves and a full syllable, sahampati, so a half syllable, full syllable, and two half syllables. Brahma jaloka dipati sahampati. So you get a feeling of how that rhythm starts to form with the chanting. And that's why we can, even if you pick up a new chant, fairly new chant, people can chant together. If everybody's making it up all at the same time, it's painful. I remember one year I spent the rains in a forest area along the border of Burma, and there was two monks were living in the village, one Burmese monk, one Mon monk, and then me living in the forest, a Furong monk trained in Thailand. And once a month, on the full moons, we would come together and the lay people would want us to chant. And it was just such hard work. Because they all chanted, we all chanted differently. Wow. You start off chanting with particular phrase, and it just could never, we spent the 3 months of the rains together, and we never ever figured out how to chant together. But as I say, if you look at this, it's actually quite straightforward, quite simple, and if people familiar with it, then you can look at it and see how to chant. And so then that Katanjali, so that's a half syllable, full syllable, half, and full syllable. And then anadi varang. So that's 1, 2, 3, 4 half syllables in a row. Anadi varang. Followed by a full syllable. Anadi varang. Atya chatta. Atya, atya chatta. So half syllable, full syllable, and then 2 half syllables. Santi, santi dasa. Santi dasatta. Parajaka chatika. Santi. So those are 2 full syllables. Dasat. And oftentimes your break will come in the full syllable. So you, that is a half, and then sat is a full syllable because you've got 2 consonants together. Sat, and you always pronounce both consonants. Sat ta, and that's 2 p's together. So it's both a long vowel. So it's a full syllable. You have a long vowel and the double p. Paracha. So that's 2 half syllables and a full syllable because you got those consonants together. Paracha. Kachatika. So it's a half syllable. Kachatika. Full syllable, half syllable, full syllable. Santi dasatta. Satta pa. Rajahakit paraja kachatika. Desetu. So the E's are long. A lot, 2 long vowels. Desetu. Dhammang. Those are 2 full syllables together. Anukam. 2 half syllables, full syllable. Anukam. Pikmang, so pikmang is a half then a full syllable. Pajang, half and a full. So, and so if we want to just try it, chanting it together and just getting familiar with it. Brahmachalokadipati sahampati Gatanjali anadhi varangaya chata sandhita satta paraja kachatika dese tu dhammang anukampimang pachang. So it, you know, once you get going on it, it rolls. And, but we can do it a few times. Okay. Pamma jalokadipati sahampati gathanjali anadhi varang ayachata sandhidha sata parlaja kajatika desa dhudhammang anukampimang pachang. You got it now, Kaushik? First Tuesday. And of course there is different stylized way. You'll hear this chant being like requesting Dhamma talks, and there's stylized ways of chanting it. Nook, have you learned it before in Thailand when you?
Very little.
Because there's a there's some very beautiful ways of Jim, that the Thais do it, and there's like in when Ajahn Jayasaro, his group. When they all chant together, requesting the Dhamma talk, and on the second, first, and third Sundays of every month.
We usually chant like that in the primary school.
Yes.
And then when we get into the high school change. So
really different. Yeah, you said, yeah, but this is the sort of thing you learn in primary school. Mm-hmm. And the way that becomes, when you learn that young, it gets embedded in the mind. Let's give it another try. Brahmachalokadipati sahampati gathanjali anadivarangaya chata sandhidasataphalajhakajhatika desetu dhammang anukampimang pachang. There we go. We're getting good. It's great. Well, it's also there's YouTube clips of this as well, and learning how to do it and memorizing it. But it's a very beautiful thing to do, to formally request teachings. And you can also just sort of, please give a Dhamma talk, but that's where sometimes ceremony and ritual has there's a certain beauty to it, and it makes it a bit more meaningful, poignant, and it gets heart to it. So, any questions? Yeah.
Following up on the YouTube clip idea, do you have any other suggestions for support with audio support through other monasteries or this monastery or just recordings?
We've got, and we haven't updated our chanting to include the new chanting book. And I don't think anybody has in our communities. It's all the old chanting book. But the bulk of it, most of it hasn't changed that much.
So there's something on
our website? On our website, so that there's both the morning and evening chanting, and there is some difference in the morning chanting of the the translation. Yeah, there's a salutation to the triple gem. There's a little bit of difference in that. But the morning and evening chanting are there. Pali, English. The chanting for a few of the recollections are there. The sutta chanting, which is in this book, the three cardinal suttas, all of them actually, four chants. So those are, we sat down and did that some years ago. There's a good selection and good chants. It's well recorded. And then the paritta chanting, which after the break, then we'll get an introduction to the paritta chanting. Those are on our website. Okay. As I said, the whole bulk of this is not yet recorded by anybody I know. Yeah.
Jean has a question about the toe marks. She asked whether there's any standards for the high and low toe marks. How high or low do you set them?
Not too high, not too low. Yeah, but just a lot of it is getting that recognizing that it's not just completely monotone. That there is a little bit of, like in the Thai language, when you chant, when you speak, there's five tones. So then when you write something, in the Thai language, the tones are kind of embedded in the how it's written. You see something written, you know exactly how to pronounce it. So some of that has translated into our how we end up chanting, because we've learned from the Thai traditions, and of course they all learn the chants from listening, but from writing, and then the writing itself ends up denoting tones. So there's a certain arbitrary nature to it in the Thai, because it's dependent on the language. Whereas, it's kind of interesting. I mean, for chanting, it might be a bit arbitrary, but then for the actual language in Thai, you know exactly how to pronounce something when you see it written, which you can't say that for English. Mm-hmm. You were going to say something?
Oh, I was going to say it's roughly CDE, if you know music. That's roughly
CDE.
If you start on D, that's...
If you start on D, it's the low E. Is that... the point being that it's a full note above a full note, not like a half note, like a flat or a sharp. It's a full note.
Okay. I see. You come to these gatherings and you learn something. I just learned something. Let's have a break. Stretch our legs. A bit of a come back in 10-15 minutes.
Yeah.